The AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The United States is formally accusing Iran of supplying short-range ballistic missiles to Russia for its war in Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and the British Foreign Secretary appearing side by side, both saying sanctions will be announced today. On stage together for the first time, Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. They are preparing for today's presidential debate in Philadelphia. It'll be 90 minutes long, airing on ABC, no studio audience, and no help from aides on stage. Tropical storm Francine gaining strength and expected to become a hurricane later today. The real threat, the torrential rain, says ABC chief meteorologist Ginger Zee.
The rainfall could be 6 to 12 inches. That is a lot of rain really quickly as well. And that is going to slow down. We don't want to sleep on this. Northern Mississippi, Tennessee, and Arkansas could get some rain going through the end of the week as well. Flash flooding there.
A strike on a tent camp housing Palestinians in Gaza, killing more than a dozen people overnight. Israel says it was targeting Hamas militants. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Airports in Wisconsin are getting a share of $34 million from Washington for upgrades. The airport at Appleton is getting $3 million to add on to its terminal building. The airport in Madison is getting $6 million to fix up its taxiways. After Kamala Harris and Donald Trump debate tonight, the campaign resumes at full speed. Lisa Hale reports.
Tim Walz will be in Wausau on Friday and Superior on Saturday. Walz and Vice President Harris plan to hit every battleground state in just 4 days. While Walz stumps in Wisconsin and Michigan, Harris plans to be in North Carolina and Pennsylvania. I'm Lisa Hale, Civic Media News.
Debate coverage begins on many Civic Media stations and online tonight at 7:30. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The Sawyer County Airport has received more than $2 million in federal funding for runway repairs. Airport officials say the $2.2 million through the Federal Aviation Administration's Airport Improvement Program will be used to rehabilitate 5,000 feet of runway. The program offers funding for things like airport safety and addressing environmental concerns. More than $34 million was distributed to airports across Wisconsin, with an additional $14 million available to distribute in a second round of funding. Thousands of people descended on Duluth over the weekend for the 30th annual Lake Superior Harvest Festival. According to a Northern News Now report, the festival has been bringing about 10,000 people into the city in recent years, and officials say they had another great turnout this year. The yearly event is hosted by the Sustainable Farming Association and features a massive farmers market, an energy fair, a nonprofit expo, and more. This year's event also featured a safety demonstration on electric vehicles. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Packers will have to get by without QB1. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with Sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. Jordan Love is expected to miss 3 to 6 weeks with an MCL sprain, and head coach Matt LaFleur says they won't risk anything with his injury.
If he gets cleared, we'll give him every opportunity like we always will. And I know he's doing everything in his power. I know he's spending a lot of time trying to get back as soon as possible, but certainly we're not going to put him in a position where if he can't protect himself that he'd go out there.
On Sunday, it will be the Green Bay Packers taking on the Indianapolis Colts as each team seeks its first victory. Wisconsin football plays Alabama this week, and head coach Luke Fickell says the defense will need to play smart.
Sometimes, and these are the situations where, guys, you can't be thinking about the big plays. You got to be thinking about the real consistent, sound things, because if you get out of place on a team like this, and in particular a quarterback like this, there's some really bad things that can happen.
Kickoff is at 11 a.m. Saturday. And tonight, the Brewers begin a 6-game road trip in San Francisco. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska for Civic Media Sports.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
We could catch an isolated sprinkle or two at some point today, otherwise partly cloudy. A little breezy with a high in the low 80s. Tonight, partly cloudy, upper 50s to low 60s. And then tomorrow, it'll be partly cloudy, not as breezy, with a high in the low to mid 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 60.
People across Wisconsin are enjoying the rewards, stability, and flexibility of a career in healthcare. Why not you? Wish Caregiver Careers can get you started as a certified direct care professional. You'll learn the skills you need to make life better for older adults or people with a disability. All training is free and online, plus earn $500 in bonuses. Start your new career. Sign up today at WISCCDCP.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on Lake Air 107.5 FM and 1260 AM WLAK. And on the Civic Media app.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Pat Kreitlow.
Wednesday, how you vote in November could determine whether China starts paring back its carbon emissions or feels it has a blank check to pollute all at once.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, let's dig it.
Stop right on. What's up? Hey, man, what's your name? It's everything, it's everything.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Before I go any further, I want to say congratulations to my good friend and colleague. Dominic Sylvia from kicking off, what we know is going to be a long running Dominic Sylvia show here on Civic Media. It was great to sit with him on last night, on yesterday afternoon for a couple hours. I'll be sitting in with him from time to time. So really excited about, Dominic having the opportunity to do his own thing. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Earl. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. How you like the warm-up?
Yeah, I don't mind it. We got to enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, man. It was, I was so excited about that warm weather on yesterday. It is Tuesday, and that guy is here.
Warm weather. Yeah. This is something you talk about day by day in Wisconsin, yeah. Right? Warm today, tomorrow. Yeah. But, it's. I think the weather in Wisconsin is to be envied, however. So I'm never one to complain. I take each day. The cool ones are great. The warm ones are fine.
Yeah, it's September.
The hot ones are good.
It's September.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, with all that timber you've got in on your property, have the leaves started falling earlier than normal?
No, they haven't. But there's been a little bit of change in color. I think, but there's been something with, like we talked about before, the apples and pears and
all that stuff
seem to come early, but no.
And so they haven't, even though those apples and pears have developed earlier than normal, some of those falling off yet?
Well, because of that, they were, and the deer are coming around early to munch on them. Yeah.
Well, so the reason I asked, Sandy, is all of this is a sign of the climate change. Because I even see the bushes and things, and I saw things in my yard, vegetation that normally doesn't start showing up until late August, and that stuff had came up in July and died out.
Oh, yeah. And then in the more invidious stuff is the change in the insect population and the diseases that our vegetation gets is going to be modified with the change in climate. And that can happen with relatively small changes in climate. The depth of the frost in winter has a big effect on what it is that survives through. So, we definitely have global change. And, the extent to which it's created by man's activity can be debated. But the fact is that we are contributing to it, no question about it, and we definitely have it. But We tend to have politicians who don't look at anything more than today's weather instead of instead of tomorrow's.
Well, Sandy, speaking of politricksters, politics.
Yeah.
Big debate this evening. You know, the world is going to stop. The time is going to stand still.
Yeah. And, you know, and the airwaves have been for days filled with conjecture about what's he going to say, what's she going to say, what's he going to do, what's she going to do, who's going to win, who's won it already. You know, the news media, this is what the news media does. If something piques your interest, they'll talk about it. Everyone is interested in this. But talking at length about what's going to happen tonight or next week, what last week when they started talking about it, is like talking about the Packers opening game in 2025. You know, it's going to happen, but we can wait to talk about it. And we can definitely wait till tomorrow to talk about what happened last night.
I think there's no question to sit here and pontificate about what Donald Trump is going to do, what she's going to say, is a big nothing burger, as they say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on. But we got some other stuff to talk about, right? We've got so many different things to talk about this morning, and I want to begin with one that I think is an absolute can't miss as one of the most important topics that we've talked about ever, Sandy, and that that you certainly have the wherewithal to explain it in a manner that the average American who goes to work every day and tries to keep food on the table but doesn't understand the depth of what the founding fathers thought in you know, the Constitution and all of those different things that, you know, those of us who are just trying to make it don't understand. And so the popular vote versus the Electoral College. Can you do us a service and explain to many of us, because you hear that the Democrats keep winning the popular vote and the Republicans haven't won the popular vote in 20-some-odd years.
But they win the presidency.
But they win the presidency.
Well, yeah. And, you know, the reason is that the founding fathers did have a view about the importance of the head count, one person, one vote kind of representation, which we find in the House of Representatives. That's the way that part of Congress is set up. The districts are meant to be similarly sized. Each district gets a vote. The votes are premised on population. So California has many more Congress people than Wyoming, which has one, I think. And so that's headcount based. They also were concerned about representing people absent the heads count, which had more to do with representing geographic territory, and that's the U.S. Senate. So the U.S. Senate is highly biased against one person, one vote. California has two senators. So does Montana. So does Wyoming. So does North Dakota.
So does Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. So, you know, the representation in the U.S. Senate is heavily skewed in the direction of more rural America, you know, that because it's based on geography. The geographic states, each one of them get two Senate votes. The Electoral College is a hybrid of the two. And the Electoral College is the way we picked our president. And the founding fathers decided that they were not going to have the president selected strictly on the headcount basis, which would have made it selected essentially through the number of representatives in Congress. So if the Electoral College was simply one person for each congressional district having a vote, that's the way it would be. And that would be a great deal like Parliament, actually. Then you'd have something quite a bit like the parliamentary process electing the president. But they didn't set it up that way. The Electoral College has a vote for each congressperson, a vote for each U.S. senator, okay, which changes this and hybridizes it into a situation where rural areas have a bit more clout in electing the president than urban areas. And it also breaks it down geographically so that because most states have a winner take all. So in California, the Democrats could win California 5-1. Okay, they could win it and have 25 million more votes for Democrats than Republicans. Same's true in New York. Same's true in Texas. Same's true in Illinois, Pennsylvania. Yeah, the Democrats could win all those states overwhelmingly, okay? And it wouldn't change the number of electoral votes that they get out of each one of those states. So that, you know, this bias that we have currently, which, you know, in some elections has been a 10 million person plurality for the on the part of the presidential vote, and that candidate loses the election. Hillary won by 4 million or 5 million votes, lost the election in the Electoral College. And if it got even more biased in this direction, like in California, those states, the same result could happen, and you could have a 25 million or 30 million person surplus of votes and still lose the Electoral College. So we're talking about this, however, because the parties have attracted voters in a manner which has pitted the cities against the more rural areas of the country. So the Democratic vote, the blue parts of this country are the urban centers of the United States, and the red vote is everything else. And so that has caused us to have this dialogue. If the Democratic Party was more successful at achieving votes in rural America, we wouldn't have this discussion. If the Republicans hadn't been so good at, I would assert, bamboozling the people in the rural parts of the United States, the less urban parts of the United States, into fearing the cities and into somehow believing that the Republicans hold something out to benefit them in the middle class of that rural population, we wouldn't have this discussion. But what has happened sociologically and sociopolitically is that rural America votes red, urban America votes blue, and therefore the Electoral College is something that we all think about every election, because the Electoral College is based on pitting urban versus rural to some extent.
So where to begin from my perspective? So the one person, one vote concept, and that the people will determine, it sounds to me like the founding fathers didn't want to trust the people enough to believe that they knew.
Well, the U.S. senators, each one of them is elected on a one person, one vote basis within their state. But the states are represented in the Senate in a disproportionate way, okay? Because they are represented two senators each state, regardless of population. So the founding fathers, and back then it had much more to do with representing land ownership, okay?
Right.
And it was basically land ownership against
the people,
popular headcount. And that was the principle they were thinking about when they set up the U.S. Senate the way they did and the Electoral College the way that was set up. So, you know, we need to either rethink that, or the parties need to get better at outreach to break down the country into something different than urban and rural.
So we're going to continue this conversation on the other side. 844-967-2789 is the number. Again, popular vote versus the Electoral College. You have any questions or comments, by all means, now's the time to call. We're gonna delve into this, because there's something here as we prepare for what people claim is the most important election in the history of this nation.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
When right-wing politicians tried to sell us out to Big Pharma and the insurance companies, Tammy Baldwin refused to back down. Baldwin took on the big drug companies and capped the price of insulin at $35.
She fought for people like me.
Everything they've done with the health care, with the insulin.
They've done a lot of things to help lower bills.
Baldwin led the charge to make sure people with pre-existing conditions could keep their health care. And after Roe v. Wade was struck down, Tammy wrote the bill to restore equal access to abortion care for women everywhere.
She wants to make sure that all of us keep our benefits. She wants to make sure that we have the right to choose.
There's too much at stake here. We have to get out and vote.
I'm going to vote for Tammy Baldwin.
I'm proud to be voting for Tammy Baldwin.
Paid for by Power to the Polls Federal Fund, powertothepollsfund.com, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, there's only one guy that could be. And
who, that?
Yeah.
That's the Who.
You know who he sounds like?
Who?
He sounds like...
who's on first? No. Who's on second?
No, he sounds like Mick Jagger a little bit.
Well, he does.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's who I thought that was. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and Sandy the Music.
Well, the music today is about truth and fiction in politics, sort of. And I started out with that one. And the new Constitution, kind of following on the heels of what we were talking about before we went to break about the Electoral College and the way the Founding Fathers set it all up in the Constitution. So a lot of people do think we need a new Constitution associated with that issue.
So let me ask you, because, again, the phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Let me ask you, because I'm listening to all of this, and I don't understand... You know, all of what brought about the electoral colleges and all the differences and all those things. And so I'm sitting here and I'm listening to it, Sandy. And you know, off the air, you were saying, well, the founding fathers set it up because in the beginning, only people who own land.
Well, land ownership was very important in those days, and there was a time when some states where land ownership was required to vote, and the debate and the way they set up the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives was very intentional. The U.S. Senate was intended to represent essentially land, geographic land, two senators for each geographic state, and regardless of population. And so, yeah, within that state, the senators are elected one person, one vote, according to the constitutional requirements of equal protection. But as to the representation of the geographic territory, it is diluted by the fact that it's the geographic territory that's represented and not the numbers of people within North Dakota and California, New York, Texas, et cetera. So, you know, Wisconsin comes as close as any of them to the average. Our representation is pretty close to one person, one vote, because we're very average in terms of the size of our districts.
So when the Founding Fathers created that reality, the composition of the nation wasn't what it is now.
No, it was not anywhere near as urban-centric.
So since we've got this major change in things, we need to look at this and kind of make the adjustments.
Well, maybe. Like I said, there's two different ways to fix this.
Okay.
The Democrats could have a better outreach to the what is now red areas of the country to attract more blue votes, so that more so the country was purple. If the country was purple all over, okay, and then we wouldn't be having this conversation.
So that's an assumption that the people in the red states think that what the Democrats are offering is something that is appealing to them.
Well, no, right now the red states don't find it appealing.
I know, that's my point.
But the fact is that it's because, and I think that the strategies of the parties, particularly the Republican Party, has been driven by the reality of the Electoral College, a realization that if we can pit non-urban people against the urban centers, we can win the Electoral College regardless of the national plurality of the headcount vote. And so they've been very successful over the years, whether it's at the conscious level or the subconscious level. I believe that it might well be at the conscious level of developing strategies that have pitted rural America against urban America and have caused people to vote against what is possibly their own personal interest.
Right.
Because they are so concerned about what it is that goes on in the cities. We can see it today that the discussion of the cities by Republicans is to vilify the cities, to say the Democrats have ruined these cities, to call them crime centers. Donald Trump spends a great deal of time stoking the fears of people about what it is that might go on in our cities. The crime, the intensity of crime, regardless of the fact that crime is going down, it still appears to be a refrain that has some traction in the red parts of the country, because people are still talking about the horrors of the crime wave we're under, when in fact crime is down at materially
so
in the urban centers of the United States.
So Sandy, let's bring CJ in. Good morning, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Carolyn. Taking my call. I like hearing Sandy say crime. I'd like to see him walk on one of the Milwaukee streets at 11 o'clock with his wife holding hands and just see how that works out for them.
Hey, CJ, there are a lot of places in the nation you don't want to walk after 11 o'clock, and they're not all in urban centers.
Well, you know, thank God for the Electoral College, because your vote, my vote, Sandy's vote wouldn't matter if it wasn't for the Electoral College.
What are you talking about? Let's unbundle that. What do you mean? How does our individual vote make more difference with the Electoral College? It depends on what state we live in.
Exactly, because our state matters. And it wouldn't matter, Sandy, if it wasn't for the Electoral College.
Well, of course it would, because if it wasn't for the Electoral College, every vote would matter, because every vote would be pitted against every other vote. I mean, the fact is that the Electoral College creates disproportionate power, so that some of us, and Wisconsin actually has an average, you know, we're as close to the average state in terms of having one person, one vote in the Electoral College as any of the states. And so, I mean, I think we're having a discussion. I don't think we're in disagreement. I don't think you understand what you're saying.
So hang on. I want to continue the conversation. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. This is a really important conversation, so you can join us. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin wildlife officials are encouraging hunters to get their deer tested for chronic wasting disease this fall. Testing helps scientists understand CWD better. Public health officials say people shouldn't eat venison from a deer that's tested positive. Hunters should also tell the DNR about any sick or dead deer they come across. People still making up their minds about their choice for president have plenty of opportunities to size up the candidates. UW Green Bay political scientist David Helpap encourages voters to do their homework.
Check the facts. Go to news sources, reputable news sources. There are some nonprofit organizations out there that try to provide good, nonpartisan, unbiased information.
Tonight's presidential debate coverage begins on many Civic Media stations and online at 7:30. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Sawyer County has drastically reduced the average jail population after years of efforts to improve the efficiency of the system. Officials cited the fact that at one point the county had only one judge as the reason so many people were waiting in jail and trials were backlogged. Since then, the county has added another judge position and started new programs to connect people who have been arrested to the resources they need, like addiction services, before their court date. The average daily jail population has dropped by 40%. Duluth Mayor Roger Reinert has ordered an internal review to determine how 1.7 million gallons of treated drinking water was released into Tisher Creek, killing over 1,000 fish. After an investigation, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency determined that it was the release of the chloraminated drinking water that led to the death of the fish in the creek. The treated water in the creek posed no threat to humans but was toxic for aquatic life. The water release occurred during a maintenance operation at a nearby reservoir. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Eminem fans take note, the rapper will open the Video Music Awards. Eminem is nominated for 8 awards. On his last VMA appearance, he shared the stage with Snoop Dogg in 2022. The last time he opened the VMAs was 2010. Deadline reports that if Eminem wins even one of his 8 nominations, that would make him the most decorated male Video Music Award artist in history. He has a total of 67 nominations, which is second only to Madonna. The Video Music Awards will be broadcast Wednesday, September 11th at 7 p.m. Central on the MTV networks. There is nothing like a good snubbing. In this year's Country Music Awards, Morgan Wallen leads the field with 7 nominations, 4 for an album called I Had Some Help, on which he collaborated with Post Malone. Notably absent from the CMA nominees was Beyoncé for her album Cowboy Carter. Cowboy Carter was number 1 on the country charts for 4 weeks. The 58th annual CMA Awards will air November 20th on ABC. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
We could catch an isolated sprinkle or two at some point today. Otherwise, partly cloudy, a little breezy with a high in the low 80s. Tonight, partly cloudy, upper 50s to low 60s. And then tomorrow, it'll be partly cloudy, not as breezy with a high in the low to mid 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 60.
Do you owe back taxes? Call Tax Solutions now and get some help. For a limited time, the IRS offers a tax forgiveness program called the Fresh Start Initiative. Our team can make it easier for you to pay back taxes, avoid tax liens, and get a fresh start.
I call Tax Solutions now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Call Tax Solutions now. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193. 800-281-8193.
The first highly anticipated debate between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump is Tuesday night, September 10th.
Listen here as the presidential candidates address issues important to you.
It's not sustainable. It's not affordable by any country.
I know what we are fighting for. We're not fighting against something. We're fighting for.
Special coverage with detailed insights starts at 7:30 p.m.
Then listen to the ABC presidential debate live at 8, Tuesday, September 10th on your local Civic Media radio station. Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, she is running in Wisconsin's 18th Senate District. Kristen Alfheim joins us at 11:06. We'll hear what she's hearing about on the campaign trail. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from
This guy, you know who this is?
No idea.
Oh, you have an idea. It's John Lennon.
It doesn't sound like John Lennon.
Well, anyway, didn't have the other three guys singing with
him. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And we are really delving deeply into the popular vote versus the Electoral College. I think it's critically important that we have this understanding and conversation about what it means, what was meant by it, and the impact that it has even today after all of these centuries on the election. CJ is still hanging on. CJ, you were saying what?
Well, thanks for keeping me over, Earl. Yeah, you know, I guess it's really frustrating because I hear the Democrats always talking about how they care about democracy, but they're willing to pack the Supreme Court. They're willing to kill the filibuster. They're willing to
CJ, what does
destroy
that
destroy the Electoral College because they can't win constitutionally. You can't win constitutionally. You want political decisions. And that's why I listened to you last night, Earl. I couldn't get through on
Dominic.
With Dom, his new show, and I'm pretty sad to see Crudy gone. Sounds like he got screwed.
CJ, what does that have to do? You can't stick with the conversation, man. You know.
I want to go back to something that was the pre-break, CJ, when you had sort of to paint the scary picture of a couple walking in downtown Milwaukee at 11 at night, and somehow that was a nightmare scenario. That is what's happened politically. And it's probably driven by the Electoral College strategy, which is you can win in the Electoral College without a plurality of votes. The rural votes can overcome the urban votes the way things are set up. But particularly if the rural vote is solidly against the cities, and if the Democratic Party ends up being a party of the cities, and that's kind of where we're at right now. But you paint a picture of downtown Milwaukee. Go to the Symphony. Everyone, if you want to go to the Symphony in the Milwaukee metro area, you go to downtown Milwaukee. If you want to go to a Bucks game, you go to downtown Milwaukee. If you want to go to Summerfest, you go to downtown Milwaukee. If you want to go to a fine restaurant, you go to downtown Milwaukee. Every state, the city is actually the jewel and the crown of the state. The state wouldn't have an economy without the economies being driven by the urban centers of the cities. But we've come to have this picture of the city. You painted a picture of a city that would be too crime-ridden. You were, in the dark. I don't know what part of the city you were referring to, but I can guess. But that's not the city of Milwaukee, okay? That's a part of the city of Milwaukee. And it's the fearful part. It's the part that people who are trying to foster and throttle the red part of the country into making sure that they vote against their interest and vote against the cities. And I would have fault both parties. I think both parties have decided to have strategies which are localized and parochialized. One party to the rural part of the country, and another party that is focused on the urban part of the country. And that's the divide. We wouldn't be having this conversation if the entire country was purple.
Sandy, let me ask you what you think the Democrats can do to appeal to rural America.
Well, I think that Kamala Harris is in the process of doing that. I think it's talking about policies. It's talking about the unified interest of the middle class, regardless of race, regardless of religion, just talking to them about the troubles that they face as families, budgetary problems they face. It's what I try to talk about on the show, because it doesn't matter where your dinner table is, whether it's in the country or in the city, when you're living paycheck to paycheck and you have issues associated with the decline of the middle class capacity to share in the wealth of the country.
And so that's
the issue. And this is nothing to do with Constitution or packing the Supreme Court or all the things
right.
that people want to wave their arms about. This really has to do with the focus of the parties and the interests, and we find that the Republican Party has identified a whole bunch of issues which are not economic issues, okay? Because focusing on economic issues would not be the way to drive this rural vote into their arms. It's social issues. It's fear-mongering and social issues. It's sparkling objects. And so, you know, I think that what we need to do is get down to talking about real subjects, real issues, the ones that are economic and that tie together the people of the middle class, regardless of whether they live rurally or in an urban sector. And we would end up with a country that was far more purple. It's not healthy for the country to be red in the broad geographic regions and blue only in the urban areas. That's not a healthy political environment.
And Cindy, and I would ask you, what are the Republicans offering rural America to address those issues that they say the Democrats are
I think they have a couple. One is to continue to talk about trickle down without using those terms. So
down hasn't worked.
Well, I know, but if you don't call it trickle down, if you simply call it building the
better.
Economy. No, yeah. no, if you no, that's oh. build back. No, if you right. talk about building the economy and making sure that investment thrives, corporate investment thrives, if you talk about prosperity generally, then that's a promise that seems to have potential to you if you live anywhere, and
right.
particularly rurally. So to the extent there's political talk, the talk is general, and it's about prosperity. It's about investment. It's not about the things that affect it's not child daycare costs. It's not the budget that people are talking about when they sit around their table. And then if you can drive them into a fearful state culturally, socio-politically, that causes them to believe that their culture, the rural culture, is at risk because of the urban culture and the people who live
centers.
That's
not true.
I'm just saying that this, to me, is thematically is what we can see. And I'm talking thematically because I think that is either the overt or covert themes that are running through our political process.
So, and then we'll go to the phone line. So with the last two Republican presidents, Trump and George Bush, when they had an opportunity to do things to improve things in rural America, what did they do?
Well, they cut taxes.
Both
of them. Well, I mean, both of them had the control of both houses.
Yeah, but it didn't benefit
the people.
For the
first 2 years. But I'm saying the first instinct they have, and both of them used that instinct, was to cut taxes and to create much larger deficits.
Which didn't benefit the people that we're talking about in rural America.
That's right. I mean, both of them would say that the financial calamities of some sort intervene before these tax cuts could pay for themselves. So we will hear people who would call in from the right who would say that the Trump tax cut was going to pay for itself, except COVID intervened, except it never did. And what it did do is drive us in the direction of inflation. When the pandemic lifted and the tax cut survived, we ended up with, another contributing factor to the period of inflation.
So Tony says it needs to be policy related. Northwestern Wisconsin is rural, but also blue. That's because of union in Superior and environmental concerns in Ashland. It's not rural versus urban, but issues that affect people.
Well, that's, yes. In places where issues are being focused upon, I think that's true. But I think that what has happened sociologically and sociopolitically in this country are strategies which are aimed at dividing rural and urban. And the rhetoric that's being used is doing that.
Let's go to Brendan from New Jersey. Good morning to you, Brendan. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Yeah, I just wanted to address a couple of points that, CJ just made. Here we are back to the Republican playbook of push the fear. Hey, you can't walk down the street. Hey, they're going to stack the courts. Hey, CJ, when Trump was president, crime was higher. Nobody has stacked the court. And by the way, they used it with Bush. before he used fear to try to get the vote in, and when that didn't work, he went and grabbed the evangelical group to get into office. I'm not sure what I'm for, whether I'm for the Electoral College or the popular vote, because everybody's vote should count. And, you know, bigger states like California and where I live shouldn't, you know, just overrun certain states that have lower populations. But I certainly know one thing. If he thinks the states are, if the, he thinks the streets are bad now, if Trump gets back in office and you've got the military patrolling the streets, a bunch of weekend warriors with M16s, he ain't seen nothing yet. So, you know, let's hope for the best. And I think tonight Trump's going to get his butt kicked.
Hey, so Terry.
Let's all watch that and have a good laugh.
Hey, Brendan, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Northwoods Terry. I like that Northwoods. Good morning to you, Northwoods Terry. You say what?
Yeah. Morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I happened to catch Mark Marketplace yesterday, which is an NPR broadcast.
Right.
On their news hour or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, there was a professor on there from the Wharton School of Business, and I believe he did an economic analysis of the plans of Trump, economic plan of Trump, and
Kamala Harris,
his plan. Yep. Anyway, he said, and I think his name is Smitker or something like that, the professor.
Yeah, but just, anyway, he said, go ahead.
If you go ahead with the Trump plan, you're going to balloon the deficit $5.8 trillion in that 10 years. If you go with the Harris plan, I believe he said $1.2 trillion. There you go. You guys take it and run with it.
Yeah. And then,
hey, Terry, thank you very much.
Well, I think the economists and the financial analysts who have looked at both plans have more worries than just the size of the deficit. It's also very inflationary. And probably would shrink the GDP growth rate materially. The plan to have all these tariffs and punitive level tariffs applied will increase the price of everything that competes with the tariff goods, and whether it's made in America, whether it's made in China, whatever. And the American public pays this tax. I don't understand why Donald Trump keeps thinking that he can fool the people into believing that when he applies a tariff to a Chinese product, that somehow the Chinese pay this price, because the price will get increased to the extent that the product can have a price increased because of the tariff increase. It will be increased, and then the public pays for it. And because the price increases because of the tariff on the tariff good, the price increases on everything else as well. So you pay that tax on something that's made in Akron, Ohio, as well as something that's made in Sichuan, China.
So, Sandy, do you think he doesn't understand that, or he's just intentionally misleading the people?
Well, he sells snake oil, and so he might. I think people who sell snake oil know what they're selling, but he's persuasive. He thinks, and so he keeps repeating this, and he thinks that this font of money that's going to be created by the tariff, therefore, can be spent in all ways. So he says, look, when we get this new economy based on all these tariffs, we can take care of child care. Did you hear that?
I mean, for
the child, see, there'll be plenty of money. It's a small dollar amount compared to all the revenue we're going to get, except that he's got a tax cut that's bigger than the revenue to be received.
Yeah, I heard him say he's going to take care of all the childs. welcome back. All right, hang on, guys. We'll come right back to you, 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth now. Just give me some truth now. All I want is the truth now. Just give me some truth now. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Tuesday with my co-host Sandy Williams. We are talking about the difference between a popular vote and electoral college. Sandy, the music.
Well, it's about, that's a Lucinda Williams song called Everything But the Truth. So it's about truth. It's about truth and fiction and politics and the music about it.
Believe it or not, I know who Lucinda Williams is.
Yeah. She's my oldest sister. She's not.
Let's go to David from San Francisco. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
Hey, morning, Earl and Sandy. When you're talking about the rural vote, I would remind people about Thomas Jefferson. He had a policy that since farmers have got to live in the real world, you know, with droughts and plagues and blights and fires and all sorts of stuff, and there are penthouse people who try to get the most capital gain in a heartbeat. You know, they want to get 15% gain, right, in an hour, in 2 hours, in 20 days. They want fantastic profits. But that contradicts the people that live in the real world. And even before Jefferson, the farmers were getting screwed because of these penthouse thinkers. And so Jefferson's economy was based, commerce as its handmaiden? Agriculture at the top with commerce as its handmaiden. And so I would urge people to think in those terms, especially with climate change. Because the big commerce boys are the ones that have caused climate change, and they're demanding to keep their profits up, even as the place is collapsing because of pollution. So, you know, in terms of coming up with an economy, I think self-preservation is going to have to be the prime motivation. You know, if we're going to be able to stop these heat waves and, you know, fires and droughts and plagues and blights, you know, we're going to have to calm the planet down, plant more trees, do more to prevent erosion, all sorts of different things. Can you imagine how much topsoil America has lost in these last couple of years with these massive floods and hurricanes and downpours? So it's, Thomas Jefferson, a couple of hundred years ago, the economy should be based on agriculture with commerce as its handmaiden.
Hey, David, thank you very much for
that. Just interestingly, that quote is a highlight, however, to exactly what I was talking about before, which is geography versus people, okay? And Jefferson was right at the heart of that controversy in terms of wanting to have a Senate that represented the agrarian agricultural economy versus the House, which represented the headcount, the people, where the more dense populations would be represented. So he was a wise man, but he also was a party to the very controversy we're talking about that resulted in the U.S. Senate and the Electoral College.
All right, Mike from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, as always. What a beautiful morning. You know, I got to tell you, you know, the public is not being respected by the process. It's been captured by the power entities, if you will. And the best example I can share, I'll give you two, is our debates and how our current media just represents everything today. You know, it's like you're saying, Sandy, it was the shiny object that gets the attention. It has nothing to do with what we need to know. It's what they want to show us. And the same thing in the debates. You know, they're saying that, you know, they had to negotiate between the two groups to come out with, you know, with some kind of settlement. Where is the American people? Shouldn't it be our debate? Isn't it our debate? It's not their debate. It's the American public's debate. And if we choose to put accountability, you know, so one side or both sides can't BS their way through these debates, you know, there ought to be fact checking. That should be the first prerequisite to having a debate. Is truth to power, what people, you know, they're forced to represent the truth and not made up fiction and more divide and conquer rhetoric. No, we need to use empirical data for what it is. It's good information that the people need to use in order to make good decisions about our representatives and where we go from forward. And until we gain that power back, and instead of relinquishing it up to the powers that be, we're going to be trying to climb a very, very slippery slope, I'm afraid.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much for the call, Sandy.
Yeah, I heard yesterday there was an interview of a Denver newscast person who had run the debates in Colorado, moderated debates in Colorado between a variety of candidates. And had gotten a lot of reaction, a lot of positive reaction, little friction back from the candidates. But he was talking about the very thing you're talking about. He said, look, I think that we, the newscasters, the people running these debates, need to respect the public. And we need to give the public what they need and want, which is people who will answer the question that's asked and be required to answer it factually. So we need to correct them. We need to keep them on track when they're asked a question so they don't just say whatever they want. And number two, we need to correct them when they're factually inaccurate so the people have something that they can trust when they're listening to the debate. And he said, but I don't think that the nation is ready for that. And I was thinking about, why is that? And I think it has to do with the corporate interest of all of the big networks into having access to the candidates. So they can't get into too negative a position with a candidate for fear that candidate will close them out of access during the campaign. And, of course, that is what Donald Trump certainly would threaten to do. He would close out access. He would publicly vilify and attack them. And so I think it's compromised the process.
You know, Sandy, at the root of this is the public is an afterthought. You know, Mike is absolutely correct. And so we are falling further and further behind in our representation.
Well, the public deserves to have these debates mean something and not just be the charade, you know, the lights.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome author, comedian Roger Rittenhouse, who will discuss his new book, Big Techs, and Tim Sowers from the Overture Center in Madison drops by to discuss their upcoming slate.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Today's U.S. Bowling League Day. I am not in a bowling league. I think that would actually be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I do like to bowl. But
you got the bowling shirt going on tonight there, Pete.
I do have the bowling shirt. In case the game breaks out, I'm ready. Because I was raised, I'm a street bowler, Chris. I'm ready in case a game breaks out. It could happen.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.